Morning, members. The chairperson is trying to connect. I think she will be in at any time now. Thank you.
Thanks, Lindy.
Good morning.
Good morning, honorable members.
Molo.
Hi, and Sonishwa and President and everyone. Morning.
Morning, SSJ. Morning,
Sonishwa.
Good Johnny.
Morning, Sonishwa. I nearly said Mlungu.
Okay, Sawubona.
So sazama uconnect Mrs. Jane, but Ulindi usesitshelile ukuthi sazama uconnect uSihlalo.
Okay.
Morning, honorable members.
Morning, Chair.
Morning, comrades. In these villages, you know, the network is not so good, but I've managed to join through the iPhone. I think I need to welcome everyone in the meeting. I'm still trying to sort out my iPad so that I can put my video on. Always 5 minutes, 10 minutes late. I really sincerely apologize for that. But I wish to request us to bow our heads where we are. And I will also look at this issue of my iPad, so that I can put on my video. Can we please bow our heads for a second? Thank you very much. The meeting is officially opened. I wish to welcome honorable members and the legal person who is present with us, the officials. I'm not sure, Lindy, whether the minister has joined. If that happens, I also wish to welcome and acknowledge her presence, and again send get well words to the deputy minister, Honorable Mogopane Henrietta. We will always put her in our prayers. We know that that situation of being hospitalized is not an easy thing, but we will pray God so that she can recover soon. Honorable members, let me upfront say that this meeting that we are having today must only continue from now up until 12 o'clock, knowing that we're staying in villages and we have to travel by bus. I don't think it will be correctly to connect whilst I am in a bus. So let's try and push. Let's try and push. Who's that?
It's Mangani. It's Mangani. Okay. I was just correcting the time. The bus are going to leave at the village is 11:30 today. Thank you.
Okay. Like mine, even mine is going to leave at 11:30. That's why I request the members to at least 12 o'clock, the meeting should be out by that time. Because by 12 o'clock already, we are expected to be in Parliament, those that will attend, and all of us will have to try and log on. So those are the reasons that I request the meeting not to proceed beyond 12 o'clock. If we happen to finish earlier than that, 12 o'clock, I will really appreciate. But 12 o'clock is the time that I think is the maximum time that we have to reach it. Thank you very much, Honorable Mangani. I thought it's me only who's having the problem of traveling with a bus. But I hear that at least even other members are experiencing that thing of traveling by bus. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. Also, that our Lindy, let's go and flight the agenda.
Morning, Chair. Okay.
Morning. Whilst Lindy is still flighting the agenda, the other thing that I have forgotten to apologize to members and officials is that our plan today was to have a meeting, a physical meeting. But seemingly we are encountering some challenges in Parliament in terms of hybrid and also in terms of venues. So, really, it was a failure. We did even the application for the dates that we have applied for during a constituency week that was declined and turned away. So we have to utilize the little that we have in terms of having these meetings and try to finish up with our meetings if it allows us to finish this bill. Then it means we won't have the physical meeting today as it was supposed to be, that is Wednesday, and also Friday. We won't have, we'll rather connect virtually even on Friday. And yeah, that's the issue. I'll give members just to pray or have an input on this whilst people are also Lindy acknowledge and give us the roll call in terms of who is present and who's not present. Lindy?
Good morning, Chairperson. And members as well. I've already greeted members. I wish to confirm the following members who are present with us. You, Chairperson, Member Vana, I have Member Iris, I have Member Mutaung, we have Member Pilankulu, we have Member Abrahams, we have Member Marae, we have Member Van der Merwe, we have Member Manganye, we have Member Opperman, we have Member Masango, we have Member Shongo. Apologies, Chair, is from Member Sukers, who has other prior commitments. She won't be with us. Another apology is from the minister. I think the ADG as well, they are out of the country. So those are the apologies and confirmation of members present. And I wish to confirm that we are a quorum chairperson. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Lindy. With those apologies and also confirming present members. And in terms of a person, legal person, who is going to do the presentation, who is that?
The person that will be presenting is Dr. Rosenberg, an expert that will take us through to the concept of baby saver, and then we will have the department. Just one submission that was omitted in the matrix from the Western Cape Commissioner for Children, and then also the MOD chair. So they are already here, Dr. Whitney and Luyanda, Advocate in Georgia. They are here, chair.
Thank you very much, Lindy, for informing us, update us about the people who are present with us. We really appreciate their presence. We are very happy, and we know that at least for today, Dr. Rosenberg, we have been waiting, looking forward for her, but we are happy that we are having. If you look at our agenda, it was too short. So we might be able, in fact, we can be able to get the time that we are hoping to have. But Lindy, let's first adopt it, because I requested that we have to leave early. I know for a fact that there are also minutes that we have to adopt them. Can I request upfront that we refer those minutes to the next meeting because of the time? We hope that Dr. Rosenberg will only take maximum 1 hour, minimum 45 minutes, not more than that, because she has already have that doc that we are pressed of time for today. But we would like to have all what you have brought for us. Can we then adopt with that amendment a little bit the agenda? Honorable Member, oh, before that, let's also get the apologies from the side of the officials, understanding that DDG Isabella, you are the one that is acting. Let's give over to you, unless someone else has been delegated to act. Over to you, DDG.
Yes, my name is Khumbula Ndaba. I'm the DDG responsible for corporate support services. I wish to tender an apology for Isabella Sikawana, who is the acting DDG Welfare Services, as well as Brenda Sibego. Both of them are actually attending cabinet this morning. So I've been asked to stand in, because they are not here. But as I do so, I also wish to inform honorable members that Deputy Minister was discharged from hospital yesterday. It's still early for her to join us, but she wished us well and wished the committee well. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Ndaba. We are very happy to hear those news of the DM. We knew that at least God will be on her side, and we knew that at the end, the God will be with the family too, which is we regard ourselves as her family. I can see that there are hands from the side of Bridget and Honorable Kate.
Thank you, Chair. And good morning. And I must also say that we welcome the the good news of the deputy minister having been discharged, and we continue to pray for her speedy recovery. The hand that you see, Chair, was in response to when you reported back that we were not going to be able to meet in person. And I seem to recall you saying that members can you would like to hear what the members have to say about that. And all one can say is to thank the Secretariat and yourself for having made the efforts to ensure that we meet in person, taking the processing of this bill seriously. But we, under the circumstances, would have to accept what has happened and hope that as we go forward, the whatever challenges there have been that have been outlined by Lindy were in the letter to us, that they can be resolved and then we can be able to meet in person. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Bridget Masango. Honourable Kate Ilangu.
Thank you, Chairperson. No, mine was to move for the adoption of the agenda. By the time you said, no, let's wait, then you wanted to the one member from the department to say something. So it was for that, my chair. I don't know whether I will continue moving for the adoption of the agenda. Chairperson, are you still there?
I've forgotten to unmute myself. No, Comrade Kate Vilangulu, you are right. I just thought that if we started with the apologies from our side, let's also again follow that procedure inside of the officials. Unfortunately, Ms. Dendaba has alluded and told us that who is acting for now in this committee of today. Thank you very much, Ms. Dendaba. And Honorable Kate Vilangulu is adopting the agenda as amended.
Tionisa here.
Yeah?
Call the chair, it's Tionisa. I had raised my hands.
Oh, it's Yoli. Okay, yes, before we adopt the agenda, let's just hang on a bit. Yuli, over to you.
Thank you, Chair, and I'm so sorry to disrupt, Chairperson. I just wanted to inform the meeting as part of the agenda that after the presentation of the department, there is one just as a presentation, not long, but a submission that I would like to make to the committee, which is also submitted by the Children's Commissioner, which was sadly omitted when I was doing the summaries. It's not a long one, Chairperson. I just want to, maybe for record purposes, to present it after the responses from DSD. Hello, Chair.
Maybe she muted herself.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's not a presentation, members. It's just for me to report back what was submitted to the committee when we entirely chair. Because I have now amended it to the report.
Chairperson? Hello, Chair. Unmute yourself.
I'm trying to call her, members. Chair? Oh, Pumela, please. She's coming back, members. She gonna you go back to her gadget.
Lindy,
are you in, Chair?
Yes. Yo, I'm back here. This thing, that's why we wanted a meeting physically. It is because of this thing of network. I don't know what happened, but sorry for that. That has happened. I'm back. Yoli, you were saying something. I heard you saying you are sorry about interrupting us. Did you manage to finish what you were saying?
I did, Chair, maybe, but for your benefit, I was asking for yes, few minutes after the presentation by DSD on the submission from the Western Cape Children's Commissioner, just to add another submission that they presented to the committee in Khayelitsha. It won't be long, Chair. It's just that it was also omitted from the report. And I'm very sorry about that. So I'm trying to correct that, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much for reminding me about that, because you told us immediately after the meeting that there is a submission that is left out by mistake, not intentionally, which you think it is necessary to know about it and you want to add it. Thanks. No, we'll give you an opportunity for that. We want to deal with this amendment bill once and for all. And
I'm seconding Honorable Bilankulu.
Oh, thank you very much, Honorable Jane Mangani is seconding Honorable Bilankulu Kate in terms of adopting the agenda as amended. Can we then proceed, Lindy, in terms of giving over to the doctor, the expert of this thing of baby savers, and listen to her presentation, understanding at least after she has presented, we will definitely have to have time to go back and look and think about it, and also have our inputs on the
recording in progress.
Over to you, Doc. And
Chairperson, thank you so much.
Chairperson?
Yes, Honorable.
Sorry to disturb you, but I wanted to propose something to say. It's like you're having a problem today. How about if you get lost, then you or we agree about somebody to take over for us to take care of the time, since we have a pressing time today.
Okay, hoping that won't happen again, but you are right. Is Honorable Stock in, Lindy, so as to be able to assist me, if anything? We are not saying it's going to happen. We wish that it mustn't happen again. Is Honorable Stock in?
Not yet, Chair. She said that he is going to join the meeting at 9:30, because he was leaving at 9:10.
Yeah, I'm sure people are traveling. Okay, let's request Honorable Kate Bilankulu to also continue with the meeting if I happen to. But I don't think it will happen again. Can we agree on that one? And then can we give over to the doc? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. I'd like to just share my screen if that's possible. I'm going to try, and you can just tell me if you can see it. Can everybody see my screen?
Yes, Doc. We see your screen.
Thank you so much. Doc, let's regard
as if it's 27 minutes past 9 now.
Okay.
But let's start counting from 9:30. So we can calculate your time from that. Thanks, Doc.
Thank you so much, Chair. Good morning to all honorable members and officials present. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to present on my expertise relating to baby savers and safe haven laws. My name is Dr. Whitney Rosenberg. I hold a law degree from the University of Johannesburg, a master's in the interpretation and drafting of contracts, a doctorate PhD in family law with a thesis entitled The Legal Regulation of Infant Abandonment in South Africa. I'm also an admitted attorney of the High Court of South Africa, a senior lecturer at the University of Johannesburg, where I've been teaching family, the law of persons and family for 8 years. I have presented on this topic at various national and international conferences, such as the Athena Conference in Greece, the International Society of Family Law Conference in Amsterdam, as well as the IVR Conference in Switzerland. It is my great pleasure to address you this morning on the safe relinquishment through baby savers. Before we begin with the definitions that I would like to take you through, I just want to discuss a few fundamentals, such as the fact that child abandonment will remain a criminal offense. With the legalization of a baby saver, child abandonment remains a criminal offense. The legalization of a baby saver is not aimed, or the legalization of safe relinquishment is not aimed at legalizing abandonment, but at preventing the act of unsafe abandonment, which can result in death. And before I continue, I'd just like to point out that relinquishment refers to the safe handover of a baby. So child abandonment will remain a criminal offense. Prevention and early intervention services. A baby saver is in itself a preventative measure, one that would be supported through application of, for instance, Section 105 of the Children's Act, which deals with the provision of designated child protection services. The legalization of baby savers works in conjunction and in partnership with prevention and early intervention services. We believe that a parent must parent. So the goal of the legalization of baby savers is not to take away the responsibility of a parent to parent. Also, with the legalization of baby savers, it will still support family preservation. That is the first goal of baby savers. It is a last resort. It is not to be seen as a first resort. Pregnancy counseling and other early intervention services will still take a preeminence above the legalization or the use of a baby saver. Of highest priority is the child's right to life. The legalization of baby savers aims to protect the child's right to life. It aims to further also protect the child's best interests, such as found in Section 28(1)(d) of the Constitution, which deals with the need of the child to be protected from maltreatment, neglect, abuse, or degradation. And I believe that the legalization of a baby saver is in line with this constitutional imperative. Baby savers, importantly, do not encourage abandonment. They are not there to legalize abandonment, but to be a last resort and to give mothers more options rather than fewer in the event that pregnancy counseling has been unsuccessful or unobtainable. The department has made a comment that the impact of unsafe abandonment is negative whether the child is safely or unsafely abandoned. And I agree with that. However, the impact of unsafe abandonment is much more severe than if a child were to be safely relinquished. The impact of unsafe abandonment on a child is severe. One particular example that comes to mind is a little baby boy. His name is Nathan. He was 2 to 3 months old at the time when he was abandoned alongside the road. And he suffered from tremors as a result of the noisy trucks that would thunder past him on the side of the road. Unsafe abandonment can lead to both death or severe disabilities in children. I have listed some incidents of unsafe abandonment in South Africa. I will not be taking us through all of these. I will just highlight a few. These are only cases that are known and that have been reported. There are many more cases that go unreported. On the 2nd of January, the bruised body of a 13-day-old baby was found along the Northwest Highway. On the 7th, a newborn baby was discovered in a rubbish bin in Ackerville. The 9th, the body of a newborn baby was washed up at Nandi Beach. And so it carries on all the way up to the 21st of March. baby was found wrapped inside a plastic bag in Isibeleni, Khumani. In the report by Abrahams and others on gender differences in homicide of neonates, infants, and children under 5 years in South Africa, results from the cross-sectional 2009 National Child Homicide Study, it was found that in 2015, 5.9 million children died before their fifth birthday. Nearly half of these deaths occurred among neonates, which refers to babies that are 28 days old or younger. Three quarters of these deaths occurred among infants, children less than 1 year old. Infanticide, which is the killing of a child under 1 year old, and neonaticide, the killing of a newborn within 24 hours or 28 days of birth, can be active or passive. Many infanticides and neonaticides are the result of abandonment. The mother leaves her infant or newborn in a place without care or protection, either with the intention of killing the child or with the hope that someone will find and care for him or her. Unwanted pregnancies are the most common cause of infanticide and neonaticide. Researchers found most of the neonates died in the early neonatal period. Only 8 out of 241 neonates were more than 6 days old when they died. Abandonment accounted for 84.9% of neonaticides, and abandoned neonates were mainly term babies. Unsafe infant abandonment is a violation of an infant's right to life, contained in Section 11 of the Constitution. Unsafe infant abandonment is also a violation of an infant's right to human dignity in Section 10 of the Constitution. And further, unsafe infant abandonment is not in the best interest of a child, as contained in Section 28 of the Constitution. Now, what is a baby saver? A baby saver, also referred to as a baby safe or a baby box. It is a box attached to a wall where a baby may be placed inside instead of unsafely left in the street, dustbin, or open felt. Once a baby is placed inside, an alarm is triggered that notifies first responders of the baby that has been left inside the box. The child is immediately removed and taken to safety. As a point of interest, the first modern day baby saver was started by the Door of Hope Children's Mission in 1999. Since then, we have plus minus 40 savers in South Africa. An estimated 460 babies have been saved through these savers. Germany, India, China, Switzerland, and the USA, to name but a few, have all since established and legalized savers. Importantly also is that although we have the first modern day baby saver established in South Africa, and other countries have copied our version of the baby saver, Germany copied South Africa's version, the USA created their own version. Although we had the first saver, we are the country where the saver has not yet been legalized. So what are baby safe havens? Baby safe havens are very different to baby savers. Safe havens refer to hospitals, fire stations, and police stations where babies may be left. It involves the personal handover of an infant to one of these designated safe haven providers. Countries such as Namibia and the USA also have safe haven laws in place. So baby savers involves the mother anonymously placing a baby in a baby box, whereas baby safe havens refers to the personal handover to staff at a fire station, police station, or hospital. For the sake of this presentation, I will be dealing with baby savers in more detail, as this is my recommendation for immediate application in South Africa. Therefore, a baby saver, as I've already said, is a box in a wall where a mother may anonymously leave an infant. There's two types of savers. Firstly, a saver can be attached to a wall of a charitable organization, a CYCC, or a registered place of safety, such as, for example, what the Door of Hope Children's Mission is doing. Or the baby saver may be placed in a wall as a freestanding unit, such as the Helderberg Baby Saver. So The two types, firstly, the CYCC or registered place of safety. When a baby saver is in the wall of a CYCC or registered place of safety, the baby is collected by staff that are employed by that home. So an alarm is triggered once a baby is placed inside, and the staff members inside the CYCC or registered a place of safety will collect that child immediately within minutes. When the baby saver is a freestanding unit or units at a crisis pregnancy center, the baby is collected by first responders. Again, an alarm is triggered, which notifies first responders, which can either be emergency medical services, ambulances, and or security companies. And they immediately remove that baby and take that baby to a place of safety. So what are the leading causes of child abandonment in South Africa? These are some of the leading causes. Poverty. And we know in South Africa that poverty is on a rise, especially with the pandemic. Gender-based violence. Our president, President Ramaphosa, mentioned that gender-based violence is our new pandemic or our second pandemic in South Africa. And then teenage pregnancy, which includes rape. Teenage pregnancy, a report was released on the 24th of August, 2021 by the Gauteng Department of Health, which indicated that more than 23,000 girls under the age of 18 gave birth between April 2020 and March 2021, of which 934 were under the age of 14 years. And then finally, restrictive legislation is also one of the leading causes of child abandonment, and I deal with this in detail in my research. My research is entitled The Legal Regulation of Infant Abandonment in South Africa. In my research, I did a comparative analysis of what the approach is in various countries. I dealt with Germany, the USA, and also Namibia, which is very relevant as an African perspective on child abandonment. In Germany, I found that they employ three methods of safe relinquishment: baby savers, anonymous birth, and confidential birth. And in order to both read and understand German, I completed a German A1 course at the Goethe Institute. What I found was the shortcomings of the German law, that the confidential birthing laws caused a reluctance in mothers to make use of this method due to the fact that the woman's identity may be disclosed upon the child's request in future. So Germany started off with baby savers, and that proved very successful. When they moved over to confidential birth, they found that fewer women were willing to make use of this because they were afraid that in future the child may request their identity or information about the identities. In the USA, the USA employs two methods of safe relinquishment. Firstly, baby safe havens, which was started in 1999, and then secondly, the more recent implementation of baby savers. What I found with the USA was that they instituted baby safe haven laws first, and they found that women were still not making use of the system. Why? Because this involves the personal handover of the baby to a designated safe haven provider. And in these instances, because of the shame attached to the pregnancy, women preferred to keep the identities a secret. What did the USA then do after finding the shortcoming? They've recently started implementing baby savers in each and every state because it allows the woman to anonymously leave her infant in the baby safe, and it saves lives. Namibia, our neighbors. Namibia instituted baby safe haven laws in 2019 after only 13 fetuses were found abandoned monthly. Section 2271 of the Child Care and Protection Act 3 of 2015, their baby safe haven law reads as follows. A parent, guardian, or caregiver of a child who abandons the child may not be prosecuted under Section 254 for such abandonment if the child, A, is left within the physical control of a person at the premises of a hospital, police station, fire station, school, place of safety, children's home, or any other prescribed place, and B, shows no signs of abuse, neglect, or malnutrition. What's very interesting about Namibia is that up to this point, In Namibia, the laws pertaining to children emulated the South African approach. A good example of this is the Children's Act 33 of 1960, which was directly inherited from South Africa. However, in the sphere of developing a solution to unsafe infant abandonment, Namibia has now taken the lead. However, Namibia's laws are not perfect. They also have shortcomings. For example, Namibia has no age requirement for the relinquishment of an infant. Usually, in other countries, an age is stipulated. So, for example, they'll say, like in the States, they'll say that a child must be 1 year old or younger to be safely relinquished in a baby saver. Also, Namibia has failed to stipulate the procedure should the child show no signs or should the child show signs of abuse. Personal handover could also be a deterrent because there's no guarantee of anonymity. So what does South Africa have in place? But before I look at what South Africa has in place, I do want to point out that Namibia, despite all its shortcomings, their law indicates a move on the part of the legislature to protect the rights of infants that were being abandoned in life-threatening situations. Now, a closer look at what our laws say. Again, I reiterate that abandonment will remain a crime. I am not advocating for this to change. South African law, though, is purely reactive in its approach to child abandonment. It punishes the crime without providing a safe alternative. There is nothing in our law to prevent unsafe abandonment. And I will read some of those laws to you now. Section 305, 3B of the Children's Act speaks about the crime of child abandonment. Section 113 of the General Law Amendment Act deals with the crime of concealment of birth. Section 238 and 239 of the Criminal Procedure Act deals with infanticide and exposure, respectively. So these provisions do not deter mothers from unsafely abandoning their babies. In fact, we know that the numbers are rising. Very few women are ever successfully prosecuted for these crimes. The crime of concealment of birth cannot be implemented where an infant is found in a public space, such as an open felt, rubbish dump, or pavement, because that does not amount to concealment. Therefore, this also proves to be ineffective. Thus, our laws are neither a deterrent nor do they serve a retributive function. So, child abandonment will still be a crime, but a provision will be added to allow for safe relinquishment. If a baby is safely relinquished in a baby saver with no signs of abuse, then it will not amount to child abandonment. The proposed wording, I have only dealt with the sections of the Children's Act that will be directly affected by the legalization of baby savers. So I've not outlined all the laws or proposed laws and provisions that will need to be implemented, but only those sections that will be affected by the legalization of baby savers. And firstly, the definition of abandonment will need to be added to. There's an addition here, and that is paragraph D. A, B, and C will remain the same, and the addition of D is proposed. Abandoned in relation to a child means a child who, D, is an infant who has obviously been deserted by a parent, guardian, or caregiver and has not been safely relinquished in a baby saver or in terms of the relevant baby safe haven laws. So here it means that a child will not be regarded as abandoned if the parent, guardian, or caregiver has done this in a way in terms of the safe relinquishment laws. Furthermore, Section 236 will also be affected by the legalization of baby savers. And this deals with when consent for adoption is not required. Here, again, the current laws will remain intact in place, but I am proposing the addition of paragraph G. So it reads like this. When consent not required, the consent of a parent or guardian of the child to the adoption of the child is not necessary if that parent or guardian G has safely relinquished an infant in a baby saver or to a designated safe haven provider and has failed to reclaim the infant or child as provided in terms of the prescribed reclaim process. So obviously we know that the provisions before this state that when a child is abandoned, then permission or consent is not required for the adoption of that child. We're saying the same thing here. If a child is safely relinquished in a baby saver, then permission for the adoption of that child will also not be required. But do bear in mind, honorable members, that there's the 90-day advertisement period in a local newspaper still applies. It would still apply, giving the parents an opportunity or anyone interested an opportunity to reach the child and to reclaim the child. Section 3053 of the Children's Act will also require certain provisions to be added, such as paragraph C, D, and an addition to subsection 4. So section 305, subsection 3 says, a parent, guardian, other person who has parental responsibilities and rights in respect of a child, caregiver or person who has no parental responsibilities and rights in respect of a child, but who voluntarily cares for the child, either indefinitely, temporarily, or partially, is guilty of an offense if that parent or caregiver or other person, paragraph C, abandons an infant other than through safe relinquishment in a baby saver or other than to a designated safe haven provider. D, relinquishes an infant in a baby saver or to a designated safe haven provider, but such infant shows signs of abuse. So here we are saying that you will not be held guilty or you will not be prosecuted for abandonment if you safely relinquish a child in a baby saver. However, if you abandon a child other than through safe relinquishment, you will still be prosecutable in terms of this offense. If you furthermore relinquish a child in a baby saver, but that child shows signs of abuse, you will still be prosecutable in terms of this offense. And then subsection 4 says, a person who is legally liable to maintain a child is guilty of an offense if that person, while able to do so, fails to provide the child with adequate food, clothing, lodging, and medical assistance, unless the relinquishing person has relinquished an infant in a baby saver or in terms of the provisions of baby safe haven laws, then he or she will not be guilty of an offense in terms of this specific subsection. So clearly, these are the only changes in the Act that will be needed for the legalization of baby savers, stipulating that if someone makes use of a baby saver, then that person will not be prosecutable in terms of 305. However, if someone makes use of a baby saver, but that child shows signs of abuse, that person will still be prosecutable in terms of this subsection. There's two key components to qualify as safe relinquishment. Firstly, you must use a baby saver or relinquish a child to a designated safe haven provider. And as I suggested earlier, I'm focusing on baby savers in this presentation because that is required for the immediate implementation for the immediate crisis of child abandonment that South Africa is facing. So I have included designated safe haven provider throughout this. However, bear in mind, I am suggesting baby savers first as a first resort. And then the second component to qualify safe relinquishment is that the child must show no signs of abuse. If a child shows signs of abuse, a criminal case will be opened. The normal procedures will be followed. That person will be prosecutable for both child abandonment as well as for child abuse. Now, the objectives of this legislation is the prevention of unsafe abandonment. It is not to legalize abandonment, but it is to prevent unsafe abandonment, like those cases I read to you in the beginning of my presentation. Therefore, the prevention of the deaths of babies. What does the Constitution say about this? The Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, Section 11, provides that everyone has the right to life. This is guaranteed to everyone, including children. The lack of the provision of a safe alternative to unsafe infant abandonment is not safeguarding the child's right to life, which forms one of the fundamental rights of our Constitution. The words of Justice O'Regan in State versus Makwanyani says, the right to life is in one sense antecedent to all other rights in the Constitution. Without life in the sense of existence, it would not be possible to exercise rights or to be the bearer of them. But the right to life was included in the Constitution, not simply to enshrine the right to existence. It's not life as mere organic matter that the Constitution cherishes, but the right to human life, the right to live as a human being, to be part of a broader community, to share in the experience of humanity. This concept of human life is at the center of our constitutional values. The Constitution seeks to establish a society where the individual value of each member is recognized and treasured. The right to life is central to such a society. The right to life also has a socioeconomic element, which means that the state will be obligated to meet certain needs in respect of this right, like shelter, food, and education. Justice Sachs mentions that the state is under a duty to create conditions to enable all persons to enjoy the right. Therefore, it is submitted that the state is under a duty to legalize a safe method of infant relinquishment, which is in line with the duty to create conditions to enable all persons to enjoy the right to life. The right of an infant to human dignity, as guaranteed by Section 10 of the Constitution, is also infringed when an infant is discarded in a dumpster, alongside the road, or in a toilet. According to Chaskelson, the right to life and human dignity are the most important of all rights, as well as the source of all other rights. These two rights must be valued above all others. Then Section 28(2) of the Constitution provides, a child's best interests of paramount importance in all matters concerning a child. Establishing a baby saver law is placing the child's best interests in a position of paramount importance by safeguarding the child's fundamental rights as guaranteed in the Constitution. The department has posed certain questions ahead of time, which I wish to address now, such as sections 105 and 107 of the Children's Act make provision for designation of organizations to render child care and protection services that include abandonment. My response to this is the child protection services that are currently rendered for abandonment are not preventative of the act of abandonment, but only step in once a child is found alive after being unsafely abandoned. We require child protection services that prevent the act of unsafe abandonment and therefore ensures the safety of children first. Therefore, these sections 105 and 107 need to be applied to legalize baby savers. Furthermore, the safe relinquishment in a baby saver would be part of a service provided under the provisions of Section 107 and 167, making provision for placement of children in alternative care. And my response to this is that a baby saver is not alternative care. A baby saver is a mechanism used to save the child from unsafe abandonment. A child is immediately taken from a saver to a registered place of safety or CYCC. Therefore, a baby saver need not qualify as alternative care in terms of Section 167 of the Act. Furthermore, a baby saver does not qualify as temporary safe care because a child is not temporarily accommodated in the saver pending a court order, but is temporarily accommodated in a registered place of safety or CYCC after being speedily removed from the saver and in terms of the normal procedures. Then the decriminalizing of forms of abandonment. The only form of abandonment that I recommend requires decriminalization is safe relinquishment. This is in order to allow the use of baby savers without criminal repercussions, but on the conditions that we dealt with previously, that the child shows no signs of abuse. The current laws regarding abandonment will continue as is. Therefore, if a child is safely relinquished in a baby saver, it will not amount to child abandonment. The department's position is strengthening of prevention and early intervention programs where a pregnant mother must be identified and supported. My position is the same, that is prevention. Baby savers prevent unsafe abandonment and provides the pregnant mother with more options rather than fewer. Baby savers will still be the last resort after pregnancy counseling and may prove life-saving where the mother refuses to make use of pregnancy counseling services or has no access to such services. I am in agreement with the Department for Prevention, but while child and baby abandonment is still happening, while it is an ongoing crisis, we need an immediate solution. With the legalization of baby savers in South Africa, a regulatory body would need to be appointed to ensure that organizations adhere to the regulations with regard to children in need of care and protection. My recommendation of an organization that can function as a regulatory body is that of Baby Savers South Africa, which is a registered nonprofit organization. A regulatory body would be required to regulate the process from the inception of a baby saver to when an infant is relinquished safely in that saver. This will result in a high degree of accountability. This regulatory body will report directly to DSD on the operation and running of baby savers in South Africa, and it mitigates opportunities for child trafficking. This regulatory body will ensure that all protocols regarding safe relinquishment are followed. It will, with the assistance of DSD, shut down baby savers that are not adhering to the protocols. It will ensure that the minimum safety and design standards for baby savers have been met before approving organizations to perform this function. It will ensure that each baby saver operator has proof that statutory services will be provided by an accredited and registered child protection organization. Conclusion, safe relinquishment through a baby saver is an immediate solution suited to South Africa for the ongoing crisis of baby abandonment. The modern day baby saver originated in South Africa. Countries across the world have taken on this concept from South Africa as an alternative to unsafe abandonment. A baby saver will function in conjunction with other early intervention and preventative measures employed by the department to reduce the number of babies dying due to unsafe abandonment. And lastly, I'd like to leave you with this thought. A child born in South Africa is at highest risk of being killed during its first 6 days of life. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, honorable members, for your time.
Thank you, Dr. Rosenberg. You have made it clearly, as I have said before, that we have to go back and think about what you are saying. And really, we know some of other things are real, as you have said it. Honorable members, that's the presentation of Dr. Rosenberg, and I requested us to go back, think about that, and we'll discuss it, and then at the end, we will come up with something. But for now, we only wanted the presentation from the doctor. Thanks ever so much, doctor, for this presentation. You've made time. You have just been on, you know, on top of things, because I thought so that you will finish up by 10:30, but now I can look at the time. It's 10 minutes. It's 2 minutes past 10. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Before you leave, we will again ask, because there's still some few things to do after your presentation, as I have said. I see hands. The one of Lizelle. Lizelle, please mute when you want to talk with someone. A little bit disturbed the dog, but she continued without, as if there is nothing that is disturbing. I'm going to give you Honorable Lizelle and followed by Honorable Leticia.
Apologies, Chairperson. I thought I was muted throughout, and I wasn't talking to anybody, so I'm not quite sure what happened there. Apologies for the interruption. Did you not want us to interact with the presentation, Chairperson? I didn't hear what the guidance was. Apologies.
Yeah, I said so. I said we still have to also discuss this. You can ask a question of clarification only, but we won't come up with things now for today. We will go back as I have requested you, and we will definitely think about it and discuss it as a committee. Thanks for apologizing, Lizelle. Maybe it has muted itself. You know, the technology is advanced.
I'm so sorry about that.
Okay. All right, thank you.
No, that's fine then, Chairperson. I think I just wanted to then thank Dr. Whitney for her time, and also wanted to underscore and support what you said, that we need to obviously take cognizance of what she had said. And then, you know, I think it was very helpful that she had guided us in terms of the suggestions on what we could consider as a committee once we go into our clause-by-clause presentation or discussions. I wanted to ask just a few quick questions of clarity in terms of her research. She said that we are one of the first countries to have baby savers, but one of the only countries not to legalize baby savers. And I wanted to ask her, in her research, why did she find this to be the case? Is there no understanding of this concept or the need for baby savers, or is it that the authorities isn't aware of baby savers? She mentioned age limits in terms of baby savers. I didn't get what the proposal was here, if she can just clarify me. And also, I wanted to ask her that often when we do engage with DSD, they argue that abandoned children can be reunited with family members. And her research, once somebody leaves a baby safely relinquishes a baby in a baby saver, has it been her experience that such children left through baby savers can be reunited with family members? Maybe she can just give me some information in that regard. Thank you, Chairperson, and again, sorry for the unmuting.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that question of clarity.
Thank you.
Let's also take the other one from Wait, Doc, so that you can be able to answer them all. There is also a hand from Honorable Masango and Aris. But yes, Aris, Honorable Aris is the one that is going to follow.
Yes, thank you very much, Chair. Can you hear me, Chair? Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. And thanks for the presentation. I did hear that the doctor said, our focus is on baby savers mainly. But however, I was just thinking about where you have and the proposal that baby safe havens must be fire station, police stations, etc. But when you think of the rural areas, you know, where there's no such things like police stations and etc., and your closest police station or hospital or clinic or whatever is a couple of kilometers away from that area, then I want to know what she would then propose, being specifically looking at the rural areas. Then also in terms of, if we think of legislation for this baby savers and havens, I just want to check how many baby savers are currently, operating in the country, since we then still experience these high
number of abandoned children. Then also the other thing that I would like to check with her is that we want to decriminalize the act of abandonment, but then you find that children, what about those children that are already in alternative care, but still they've been, you know, even when they are in alternative care, they've still been abandoned. Will that be criminalized when children are in alternative care? Or will it only be once, you know, the mother has abandoned the baby? Thanks.
Okay. Those were the only questions for clarification, Doc. So you can respond, and we want to thank you about sending us through the chat the your email address, so that if we have got any other questions of clarification, we can be able to go to consult you. Thanks, yes. Doc.
Thank you so much, Che.
Sorry.
Oh.
There are two hands, Che.
You did mention my name, Che. Sorry, I'm so sorry.
Oh, yes. And also, Honorable Paul, now I can see. Sorry, Doc, about that. Let's just wait and be patient for these questions.
No problem.
Of clarification one. Yes. Over to you, Honorable Masango.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much. And thank you to the doctor for such an amazing presentation. Mine is for clarity, because towards the end of the presentation, Dr. Rosenberg was responding to what may have been questions, just making sure that there's clarity there. In the meeting of last week, I believe, we had there was a time when this issue of baby savers was discussed, and the department through Ms. Isabella said, and I quote, there was intersectoral approach to support children to avoid certain circumstances. The baby savers were basically a reactionary approach, not a proactive approach. When one considered early prevention and early intervention programs, that sort of concerned me, and I have been following the presentation almost word for word. And I just would like to know if the doctor could respond directly to this baby savers being a reactionary and not proactive, and not a proactive approach. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Honorable Paul Neet. Thank you, Honorable Masango.
Good morning, Chair.
Good morning.
I want to say thank you for the presentation. It was really straightforward. The question that I want to ask is that how do you identify where these baby savers must be placed? I want to make an example from where I'm coming from. The area where I'm staying, the road next to me, the child welfare opened a baby saver there, because one day they found a body next to the area where I'm staying. There's an informal settlement. And the baby was in a plastic bag, and the dog started eating the baby's arms when the community found it. They went through the whole informal settlement to look for the mother. And they wanted to have this justice on the mother, you know, because the mother had just abandoned the baby. In that same street, they found three babies abandoned in the sewage, where they threw the babies in the sewage. And then the child welfare opened this baby saver in that street. But when you look at the other areas in Bloemfontein and Mangaung also, is that it's happening everywhere. So how do you identify the area where you can put a baby saver, and how must it be done? And then the other question I want to speak about is this, that the doctor spoke about prevention. You know, there's abortion and all those things. But if you look at the hospitals, if you want to make a booking as a young lady, you want to abort the baby, you wait for sometimes 3 to 4 months, and then maybe it's too late to abort the child because the fetus has grown, because you can only do it for a certain amount of period, first 3 months or 2 months, whatever the case may be, I don't know. So how are we going to prevent this thing that when children go to these hospitals, because they don't have money to pay for a private place, that there's going to be enough hospitals and places for these children to go safely and have the abortion program for abortion? Is that because the waiting list is long. You put in your name and then they say you must come back in 3 months. 3 months, your stomach, everyone can see that you're pregnant. How are we going to...
Hello.
Now we're gonna go about that one. Thank you,
Honorable Bonit. Those were the questions, Doc. So we can just respond to them. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Madam Chairperson. I will deal with Honourable Member Liesels first. I think I hope I wrote down everything. The reason why baby savers have not yet been legalized in South Africa, in my opinion, based on my research, was as a result of a lack of awareness of this safe method of infant relinquishment. So what I found in my research is that there was not much knowledge behind what a baby saver is, how it functions, and its aim. That in other countries, they also experienced the problem that it was regarded as, first, when they were doing the debates, that it was regarded as legalizing abandonment. So that's where many legislatures started from. And that's due to a lack of awareness surrounding these laws and what baby savers are aimed at. In many of those countries, they ironed that out and they found out that actually it's preventative and it is not legalizing child abandonment, but rather providing an alternative to women who were anyway going to abandon unsafely. And then also, Honourable Member Liesel asked me about the age. What is that? And let me clarify. So with the implementation or legalization of baby savers, when these laws are legalized, such as all over the world in many different countries, they have different stipulations. And one of it is that the child cannot be older than this certain age in order for it to meet the requirements of being safe relinquishment. So they give a cap age, the maximum age, and many states in the US have made the age limit 1 year old and younger. Now, obviously, this would be determined by what our statistics say in South Africa. And our statistics indicate that 90% of children that are abandoned are under the age of one. And therefore, this would be the appropriate age limit. And a mother who then relinquishes a child older than this does not fall within the realms of these laws. However, we must bear in mind that obviously the goal is to have children safely relinquished. So that must always be borne in mind, that the opposite can occur, which is unsafe abandonment that could lead to death. And then Honourable Member Liesel also addressed the instance of, does it happen that children are reunited with their parents? Again, in my research, it shows that if measures are put in place, reunification is possible. In South Africa, we already have a 90-day period, where the child may not be placed for adoption while there is a newspaper advert that is placed notifying anyone that knows of this child to come forward and claim the child. So that's already in place in South Africa. That would continue in place. The other thing that other countries have done is allow the mother to fill in, to take a little form with her and to then drop off the form in the saver at a later time, or to take down a number that she can call if she wants to be reunited with her child, a number that is displayed on the baby saver. So if she changes her mind, she can come back and say, look, I have made a mistake. I actually want to reclaim my child. So those things are also legislated upon, and those things are also mentioned in these laws. And then Honorable Member Aries dealt with baby savers and if there's no police stations or baby safe havens in rural areas. So if This is why I'm suggesting the implementation of baby savers as a first step, because the two things are separate and different. Baby savers are different to baby safe havens. In South Africa, it will be easier for us now to implement baby savers as a first step, where we will not require the assistance of police stations, hospitals, and fire stations. Because organizations that want to and that adhere to all the standards, the minimum standards, the protocols of how to receive a child, they are the ones that will open up a saver if they adhere to all of these. So it will be by choice, and it won't be something that's forced on every police station, fire station, and hospital. I do suggest that in future, we look at implementing it, implementing baby safe haven laws, but that's for the future, not right now. With this crisis, we need an immediate solution, which is baby savers. But in the future, we would have to train up our hospital staff, our police stations, and our fire station staff on how to receive a baby, but not for now. And this is also why a baby saver will work best in rural areas, because if there is no police station, no hospital close by, and no fire station close by, then making use of a baby saver will definitely save the life of that infant. And then also, Honourable Member Aries mentioned how many baby savers are operating in South Africa currently, plus minus 40 baby savers that I know of are operating in South Africa currently. So that seems like a lot. And 460 babies have been saved. That number compared to 40 doesn't seem that significant, but bear in mind that because it's not legal, it's unable to advertise its existence. And in certain areas, it's much more difficult to implement a baby saver than other areas. So the difficulty experienced on the ground is that we can't advertise baby savers because it's not a legal method. There's no awareness surrounding this. So in my research, I suggest, and I've seen, that an awareness campaign goes hand in hand with the legalization of these savers. Because without an awareness campaign, these savers will fall into disuse, which in my research has been proven in many countries. And then also, Honourable Member Aries made a comment about alternative care, and I think the crime of abandonment. The crime of abandonment is only referring to what we know as abandonment today. If a mother leaves her child on the street, or if a mother deserts her child, that would be abandonment. What I'm saying is that if a baby is safely relinquished, that child does not qualify as an abandoned child because the mother's made the right choice. And then from there, which is the normal procedures followed today, a child is removed from a baby saver and then placed in alternative care, then placed in a CYCC or registered place of safety. That is the normal procedures that are followed. So all the normal procedures will still be followed. It is just the laws governing the use of the saver that I'm dealing with today. Because in order to use the saver, in order to recognize the saver needs to be legalized. And then the questions by Honorable Member Masangu, intersectoral approach to support the child, reactionary, not proactive. My research found that our laws are actually not preventative. Our laws are reactionary because they only cater for instances after a mother has already committed the act of child abandonment. Then she's prosecuted in terms of child abandonment. Then she can be found guilty of the crime of concealment of birth, depending on the circumstances, or exposure or infanticide. And there's very few cases of concealment of birth that are actually successful. So what are these laws doing? Are they really functioning as they should? No, they're not, because they're not serving to deter the mother or to stop her from proceeding with the act of unsafe abandonment. But a baby saver, or the legalization of safe relinquishment through savers, is preventative, because it says to the mother, you don't have to commit the crime. Here's another option. Here's a safe option. Because if we face the truth, this is happening currently in our country. We can't deny it. The numbers, the figures show it, and the research shows, also the reports, the news reports show that. So this is something that's currently happening. And what legalization of safe relinquishment says is, we don't want you to commit the crime. We don't want you to resort to that because the child's life is in danger. So instead of doing that, please make use of a saver. However, in this case, a saver is still, I must mention, a last resort. And then Honorable Member Paul Nita, how do you identify where baby savers must be placed? So what I suggest is that these savers should be placed in areas where the numbers of abandonment, as suggested by Honorable Member, are high. The numbers of fetuses found in open felts, drains, dumpsters, and toilets are high. And so those areas would need to be identified. But again, placing of a saver is the first step. Awareness is the very important second step, because it's no use that a saver is placed 500 meters from where a baby is abandoned unsafely. There needs to be awareness drawn to the existence of the saver and the fact that the mother has other options, like pregnancy counseling and all the other options that the department is going to implement. And then a major, the other question by Honorable Member Polita is, you wait 3 or 4 months to abort. What do I suggest in this case? So in this case, the legalization of baby savers goes hand in hand, like I've mentioned, with other early intervention and prevention programs. And the organization, for example, Baby Saver South Africa, networks with crisis pregnancy centers and help from government to set, would be requested to set up more crisis pregnancy centers in rural areas. So here, for instance, like I've mentioned, Baby Savers is a last resort. Family preservation is high on the list and is first point of call. Parents must parent. But what happens in the instance where pregnancy counseling fails, or where pregnancy counseling is unobtainable, which we know is the case in many rural areas, then a baby saver saves the life of that baby. I hope I've answered all the questions. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you very much, Doc. I think you have tried. In fact, you have answered, you haven't tried. You've answered all of the questions of clarification. I think for now we are done, honorable members. Even ourselves, really, we need awareness. And this thing of pregnancy counseling is really critical, so that this we can try to avoid these things to happen in our country. Thank you very much, Doc, again. And maybe we can excuse you.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. I just want to check if everyone's received my presentation, the slides, if it was emailed to everyone.
Yes, Doc. Okay. Unless I hear someone, I think even Alex Abrahams is saying everybody has received. It means that we are covered, but it doesn't mean that we can't use your email to check for some of other things that we need the clarification.
Yes, really, you are more than welcome. Yes. Thank you very
Thank you
much.
Very much. You are excused.
Thank you very much. Goodbye. Thank you, honorable members, for your time. Goodbye.
See you in UJ as a student there. Then, Lindy, can we go to the next item?
Chair, we're going to request Advocate Mchochisa to take us through to the response on the submission from the Western Cape Children for Commissioner for Children. And then you'll afterwards with a comment. Thank you.
Okay. Over to you, Honorable Mchochisa.
They must switch the phones, others. Or if you're in one room, advocate.
Thanks, Indy. We're trying to deal with.
Use one speakers, others must switch off their speakers so that you avoid the echo. You must use one gadget, others must be on silent.
I hope it's clear now. But I think there is still an echo.
Are you logged in?
Mr. Mchuchisa, over to you.
Just mute on your side. I can't decide. It's just coming. The PlayStation is yes. Yeah.
We understand that you are together in one room and other gadgets are opened. That is exactly why there is an echo. So you need to be scattered or close your gadget, the ones that are in that same room with Advocate Mchuchisa.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members.
Morning, that's better.
Oh, okay, thank you very much. My apologies for the technical glitch. There is a presentation that we are going to make which relates to the response to the questions by or proposals by the Cape Commissioner for Children on the issue of the bill. It was actually a late in session. It's therefore an addendum to the metrics that we already have that is before you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. One of the questions that was raised by the Commissioner for Children on the Children's Amendment Bill was that there is a need to add some words in the definitions, like aftercare. There is a suggestion that has been made in terms of how that definition should be, and the understanding is that the department does not support the proposed. More especially with regard to the adjectives that are being used in this particular definition, because these words involve something like loving and understanding. So there is a challenge with regard to the meaning of these words. If the department was to agree to the insertion of these words in the definitions, because they are very much subjective and not easily implementable. Again, Honorable Chair, the issue of the other insertions, again in B as indicated there, it is also that the department is of the view that the proposed definitions will not comply with the issues of simplicity, precision, and clarity as required by the foundational principles of the rule of law when the law is developed. Because in order to have these words, these must be implementable at the end of the day. Again, there was another comment, Honorable Chair, which required the insertion of 1BB in order to define competent parent, caregiver, guardian. In order to read a competent parent or caregiver, is a designated person who demonstrates this. And again, with regard to this, Honorable Chair, we said let the courts be the ones that decide on the competency of a parent or a caregiver or a guardian. It cannot easily be defined in the legislation because this is not cast in stone. It differs from person to person and situation to situation. So if we were to have it here in the legislation, it would be very much problematic in that particular case. Again, Honorable Chair, there was a need to insert in section 18.2, an obligation for parents to love their children. As follows, the parental responsibilities and rights requires that the parent must love their children. So in this particular instance, it is again not easy, Honorable Chair, to have this in a legislation because as we have indicated that it is not measurable. What we need to have in legislation for the sake of clarity and precision is to ensure that, I mean, we can easily measure a particular provision that we need to have. Because if one was to say, let us add the words love and care, the parent has got a responsibility to love and care. Every parent would say, this is how I love my children, this is how I care for my children. And in that particular case, it would differ from parent to parent or from case to case. We must also remember that even in the case where the matter ended up in the Constitutional Court regarding reasonable chastisement, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, the case was about a father who had beaten up his child all in the name of love and care, as he stated in court. So because of such dynamics, it is not advisable that we have this in our legislation. Again, Honorable Chair, there was a proposal to remove in section 18.3c of the Act some of the words like consent to the child's marriage. In section 18.3c, the department supports the proposal because it is a consequential one. We agree with that particular proposal. Again, Honorable Chair, there was a proposal to amend section 22, which we have agreed to that. We support the proposal that is being suggested by the Commissioner with regards to the insertion of 22A through capital A. There was another proposal from the Commissioner, Honorable Shen, Honorable Members, where the recommendation was that good fathers and good mothers or good parents with their queer identities must be given equal parental rights and responsibilities in a parenting relationship, and the proposal is supported by the department, Honorable Chair. Again, there was another proposal to the amendment of section 40 that is replacing the word spouse with partner, which the department supported in this particular regard. Again, Honorable Chair, with regards to section 12 of the Act, there was a proposal to insert the definition of corporal punishment and the provision around punishment, corporal punishment, in such a way that it reads as follows: no child may be subject to corporal punishment or be punished in a cruel, inhuman, or degrading manner. Again, Honorable Chair, the department does not support this particular insertion because of the Constitutional Court judgment that we have already been talking about all along during our presentation. Because if we insert this particular provision, it will mean that we are only banning or prohibiting corporal punishment of a child, whilst even the mere smacking of a child is also declared unconstitutional in the country. So corporal is very much extreme in this regard, as we indicated. So the proposal is not supported, because the rationale for the development of legislation is not to rewrite the existing law. The Constitutional Court has already pronounced in this particular case, as indicated. Again, Honorable Chair, Section 18.6, there is a proposal to add a person who has a case of a child, including a person who has parental rights and responsibilities. The respect of a child must not subject the child to corporal punishment or treat the child in a human degrading manner. Again, this is the submission that we have already made, that the proposal is not supported as per the particular constitutional court judgment that we have alluded to. And the question has always been coming, Honorable Chair, that in terms of the South African Schools Act, this provision is there. And our indication is that in the South African Schools Act, this provision was inserted before the delivery of the constitutional court judgment. So it has always been there. That is why it is stated in that fashion. But since the pronouncement by the constitutional court on the issue of reasonable chastisement, that provision is holding no water at all, because it does not need to be there. Again, Honorable Chair, in section 110, subsection 2, there is a proposal that it needs to be amended in such a way that it adds the word has been abused or neglected in the provision itself, of which the department accepts the proposal, and it will have to deal with the provision in that particular fashion. And there is also a provision in section 110 and subsection 5 that it needs to be amended in such a way that it provides that the provincial Department of Social Development don't designate a child protection organization. Child protection organization to whom a report has been made in terms of subsection 1 must 1. Make an initial assessment of the report, including giving the child an opportunity to share their account. And the proposal for the insertion is accepted and supported by the department. With regards to paragraph F, there is also a proposal that the word substantiated, that is not just all reports of abuse, substantiated reports of abuse. I believe the rationale here is to ensure that we do not clog the system unnecessarily. So the proposal is accepted in this regard. Again, in section 144, there is a proposal that the words purposes of prevention and early intervention programs should be added along to the new subsection, which means that the department, in partnership with relevant stakeholders, must take all reasonable steps to ensure that education and awareness raising programs concerning positive parenting are implemented. Yes, with regard to that, what the department is in agreement, but the proposal for positive parenting programs should be taken into account. Again, In age, there is also the need to amend the aims of prevention and early intervention programs to be more child-centered and supportive, which we have also agreed to as a department. With regard to section 144, speaking to the purpose of prevention and early intervention programs, where there is a need to delete the words preserving the family structure, which need to be taken off from there. Yes, there is an agreement with regard to that. There is a support even in K with regard to the addition of the words supporting families to recognize and overcome the structural impediments that trap them into poverty, that is the children. So in respect of these particular provisions, the department is in agreement with the insertions. Again, Honorable Chair, with regard to Section 150, which also needs to be amended, the proposal is that Section 150 of the Principal Act must be amended in order to do away with the words "does not have the ability to support himself or herself," and the bill will be amended to cater for the proposed amendments in this regard, because the department is in agreement therewith. With regard to Section 178, again, there is a proposed insertion of subsection 2 there, which reads as where the investigation reveals negligence on behalf of the foster parents or child or the child and youth care center management, the HOD may transfer the child to another form of care in terms of Section 174 and cancel the registration of the center in terms of 22.21. The department disagrees with the commissioner's recommendations in this regard, because the insertion makes provision for dealing with the matters referred to by the commissioner already. So the cancellation of registration of the youth and care is already dealt with in terms of Section 203 of the Act. Again, in Section 178, there is a proposal to insert consequences for social service professionals who do not fulfill their duty to promote and protect children's rights. Yes, in this particular regard, we are saying the department notes the commissioner's recommendation, but it must also be taken into account that Section 305 of the Act does make provision for officials who fail to comply with the Act. So if we are to add more in this particular provision, we would be repeating exactly what Section 305.1c is already providing, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. And that concludes the presentation, which is an addendum to the metrics that we've delivered previously. Thank you, Chair. Thanks, Honorable Members.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Advocate Mchuchisa, about that. Let's see whether are there any discussions on this one. Oh, Yoli, we should also allow you to present what you're supposed to present.
Yes, Chair. Yes, maybe so then we can
discuss it with the yes.
Agreed, Chair. Okay. Chairperson, there was also another submission that was made in Khayelitsha when the committee was there. And as I apologize earlier that I mistakenly omitted these two submissions. This one, Chairperson, was mainly a call, or was mainly directed to the committee for action. It was a submission regarding the election of a mayor in Canaland, in the Western Cape, one of the municipalities. This mayor, as per the submission, is that he is a convicted child rapist. So the submission was really raising a concern, a serious concern, and unhappiness about this election, seeing that the person has this kind of a background. And so the Child Human Rights Defenders, together with the Commissioner for Children, they were actually calling for the committee, or urge the committee, to speak out strongly in public about this matter. And they were basically questioning how this mayor was elected, given that he had this kind of a background as a convicted child rapist. And also, Chair, just to end it, I'm summarizing the submission, but this is the main issue that was submitted to the committee, that the child defenders are willing to engage with the committee on this issue privately for the fear of being identified, that they are willing to then have a private engagement with the committee this year. The submission was made last year. So this is the end of it, Chairperson. So that this one is mainly for the action of the committee. But I think maybe our legal advisor can maybe assist the committee in how to deal with this kind of a submission, Chairperson. Thank you very much. That's all, Chair. Oh, and just to mention, Chairperson, that the two reports, I have since amended them, the one on the public hearings in Khayelitsha to include the submission. I've also amended the report on the summaries that were on the submissions that were summarized. I've also included the other submission that the department presented on. So those reports were accordingly amended, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Yoli. Then we can, we still have time. So can I see hands, honorable members, having input on what has been said? Okay. The way it is so clear that there's no even one hand that has been raised, meaning that we are on top of issues. We seem to be geared for. All right. Lindy, what is the next thing after this presentation?
Chair, is the adoption of the motion of disability.
Okay.
Yes, Chair. I don't know, Chair, whether as Yoli advised during her presentation, maybe the legal advisor can come up with a guidance on the matter. He's here with us.
Yes.
So I don't know whether you want to give him an opportunity to guide the committee.
Yeah, before we adopt. I think he must do that. Yeah, he must do that. Over to you, legal advisor.
Jengane?
Who on?
Which one?
Hi, good morning, Chairperson and honorable members and colleagues. Sorry, Lindy, I just joined the meeting. I'm not sure what you want me to guide the committee on.
It's around the submission from the commissioner on the matter of the mayor that was appointed.
Oh, yes, the discussion that I had with Lindy. No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I must first apologize. We have not been able to fully and adequately support the committee due to capacity constraints that we're experiencing at legal. We deal with numerous committees, and some of which we are deployed on a full-time basis or attached on a full-time basis. And as a result, we were not able to join all the committees of the meetings of this committee as we would have wished, Chair. For that, we sincerely apologize. Today, Chair, I have just run away from another committee to come and support the
Will you be our legal advisor from today?
Chairperson, I am not able to fully comment. Unfortunately, Chair, this is a matter that I've also discussed with my superiors. Unfortunately, I'm not able to be dedicated to only one committee at this moment due to the capacity constraints that I've mentioned.
How many are they? How many committees are you involved?
Chair, I support up to 9 committees.
You?
And I'm seconded to the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence. But I support your committee. Chair. I have been supporting this committee. But I just thought that I must apologize for the inability to attend all your meetings as I should. with respect to the advice that the court gave.
Thank you, sir. With my colleagues from the State Law Advisors Office, who are also supporting us in the work that we do. And I've also had numerous discussions with my colleagues, Mr. Chochisa from the department. And by saying so, Chair, I want to confirm that, in fact, I have been keeping in touch with colleagues and also the developments as the committee is processing the bill. With respect to the issue before the committee now, Chair, of the public I advised Yolisa, who brought the matter to my attention, Chair, that all submissions made to the committee in respect of this bill must be put before the committee for the committee to consider the submissions and decide how it wants to process the submissions. Those submissions relating to the bill itself would be relevant to the process that is underway in the committee now, Chair. And the committee will deliberate on those and decide on how it wants to go forward in when it is dealing with the clause by clause. But those matters which came up to the or were brought to the committee's attention during public hearings, which are not necessarily in respect of the bill or directly linked to the bill that is under consideration, the committee has one of two options, Chair. Where it is matters relating to policy, those matters must be referred to the department for the department to respond to those issues and bring about solutions to them or respond to those issues. Because the matters of policy are matters under the direction and control of the department. Where it is a matter of oversight, Chair, as this matter seems to be, relating to an issue of local government, the committee may take the complaint and refer it to the relevant sister committee within Parliament to dispense with the matter, Chair. So I understand that the content of the complaint is that there is a mayor who is accused of committing a crime, but who has been appointed to occupy a position in government, regardless of the crimes that the person is accused of or even convicted. Now, Chair, much as the matter relates to some of the matters that are under the committee's oversight, the matter is under the direct control and direction of, or is overseen in terms of how Parliament is arranged by the Portfolio Committee on Local Government and Cooperative Government. And therefore, Chair, it would be advised from our perspective that the committee must refer the matter to the relevant committee for that committee to deal with it, Chairperson, and that the complainants be advised that the matter has been referred to the relevant structure for that structure to attend to it. Thank you, Chairperson. That is the advice that we gave this morning and which we gave to the committee now. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mkanyane. It is a pity, really, about what you are saying to us today, that you are serving 9 committees. But nevertheless, we really appreciate your presence. In terms of advising us, if you have time. Lindy, there seem to be no hands from the honorable members. I'm not sure whether they are just getting ready for the bus that will leave at 7:30. So they are busy. Okay, there's a hand coming from Honorable Alex.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just would like some clarity. Was the advocate also not supposed to speak to the motion of desirability?
In terms of advising us?
Yes.
Are you asking about that? Because in the motion of desirability, I think Olindi has explained to us what does it mean and how to take it forward. Okay. But if you want the legal advisor to repeat what Lindy was saying or say something on what is supposed to happen. Mr. Chairman, are you still around?
Yes,
okay, in terms of the
process. Yes, Chairman, I was going to still reiterate what Lindy said and also see that Lindy is actually the best person placed to advise on procedural matters such as the motion.
So when you are not the best person, eh, to tell us, because seemingly Alex wants you to say something on what is it that is meant. I don't know.
Okay.
Because Lindy explained it. I think, okay, who's saying, Che?
It's me, Jefferson. It's Honorable Funamadova. I'm sorry, may I just again ask a question of clarity around the motion of desirability from the legal advisor? I think the question we are asking is, can we adopt a motion of desirability before we have gotten legal opinion from Parliament's legal advisors on some of the clauses that we still want legal advice on? So I think that is the question we need from the legal advisor. Is it prudent to adopt a motion of desirability before we've received legal opinion on some of the clauses that we are going to ask legal opinion on? So that's my question.
Maybe that's also what Honorable Alex was asking about, ne? Though Lindy, or in fact, even Lindy, explained this to us that day. Can you, Mr. Mshemane, say something on that? There's a question from Lizelle. Mshemane, are you around?
Yes, I am, Chair, and I had a question from Honorable Funamadova. Chair, my understanding of the stage for motion of desirability is that the committee can decide when it wants to consider the motion of desirability. It could happen before the legal advice from us, Chair, as to the issues that have been raised by the committee, or it can happen afterwards, Chairperson, depending on how the committee internally has decided to arrange itself when it is processing this bill, Chair. The issue of the questions of clarity, Chairperson, does not end now. It's going to be a continuous process up until such time that the committee has adopted this bill. So there will always be legal questions that come up for us to provide legal opinion on. In which case, Chair, in my opinion, Chair, it would not be prudent for the committee to await legal advice on each and every aspect before it adopts the motion of desirability. And the motion does not get adopted at the end of the process, whereas legal advice is continuous until the process comes to an end. And therefore, for me, it would be Chairperson, important for the committee to consider the motion now, whilst we continue to give legal advice as and when it is needed. Thank you, Chair. That's my view on it. However, Chair, if members are of the view that they need a written legal opinion on the matter, we can quickly provide advice in the next meeting of the committee. Written. Thank you.
At first, you were so technical, Mr. Mshemane. Really, as a legal person, you seem to not to talk what Lindy was saying, but at the end, you really summarize it the way Lindy was saying, that the motion of desirability is to allow us to do more discussions and get into the depth of this amendment. And it also, it's like a certificate for ourselves to carry on and continue with all what we want to know. There is a head from Honorable Masangu. Over to you, ma'am.
Chairperson, thank you. I just went back about this issue because we discussed it last week and Lindy really explained it so clearly. But I also just went back to the previous motions of desirability and consulted. There used to be a reference to Rule 286 of the rules of the National Assembly, where, because I'm not a lawyer, I'm just going to say the understanding of a layperson, to say that for me, as Lindy so rightly said, when we sign the motion of desirability, when we approve it or do whatever, what we are actually saying is that we agree with the principles of the bill and the need for the bill are being accepted by the committee. And I seem to remember that we actually, when the bill was tabled before us, after being ATC'd, we said that we accept the bill, or we approve the bill, or I can't remember the words we used, because this bill primarily it is a response to the North Gauteng High Court judgment, and we have as the members of the committee and from being legislators, we have the responsibility to ensure that legislatively that judgment is responded to, because the executive has done what they needed to do. So now it is in our hands to make sure that our part of the responsibility to respond to the North Gauteng High Court is fulfilled. So by that, I mean that it only now opens the doors for us to find as much support, legal support and otherwise, as possible to ensure that we discharge that responsibility to its, final conclusion that is going to be also making sure that the children's best interest is at the center of whatever we do as the department. As the portfolio committee, and of course, by extension, the department for executing what it is that is in the law. Thank you, Chair.
We have lost you, Honourable. But
no, I had finished, Chair. Yes, I just wanted to introduce the angle of Rule 286 of the National Assembly to the colleagues, because that's where it clarifies why we need now more than any other stage before to ensure that we table and approve or vote or whatever the motion of desirability. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Masango. You are explaining it exactly as how Lindy explained it time and again in terms of that. It doesn't mean that we're done with it, but it means it's a license allowing us as members to continue discussing this. And we are saying in principle we agree with it, but we are not closing and finalizing it. We still have to discuss it. But we requested them to bring us the expert in terms of the baby savers, and also have some legal advice from our legal people. Then can we go to that without wasting time? I know that people will start to be impatient and moving up and down. Those that are like myself are not having it. One of their transport buses will arrive from 11. They are leaving at 11:30. They are not arriving. Can we go to that MOD?
Chair, I don't know whether you want to flight the report to read the report through, or what would be the approach?
You can do it, but it's the report that we know. But you can do it for formal reasons and maybe procedures. Otherwise, it's the report that we were dealing with throughout.
Chair, the first part of the report provides the background as to when the bill was tabled in Parliament, also as the referral of the bill. After that, something is wrong here. I want to add.
Okay. And then that's the procedural processes, or when the minister introduced or tabled the bill to parliament. And this bill was tabled sometime in August, was referred to us in August 2020 by the Speaker of Parliament for consideration and reporting. And then after that, we invited the department on the, I think on the 6th of October, to brief us on the bill. And then we took a decision to advertise the bill in the national, regional, and newspapers, inviting public to make comments on the bill. And then we agreed to conduct the virtual national hearings from the 14th, I think the 18th of May. And thereafter, we started our process on the 2nd of June, conducting public hearings in the 9 provinces. And then the last date of the provinces of the public hearings was 10 December 2020. And then thereafter, Chair, this paragraph provides the background as to where the reason behind the department to draft and table this legislation to parliament. It emanates from a litigation by the Center for Child Law versus the Minister of Social Development. There was a case, and then the North Gauteng High Court gave a ruling and then a court order. And then it was extended, I remember, at the beginning of last year. And then the court order was extended until the 29th of November this current year, of this year, of 2022. So the next paragraph, it provides as to what this bill seeks to amend. There are a number of clauses that the bill seeks to amend. I think it's about 143 clauses altogether that bill is amending. I think, Chair, the last paragraph, a paragraph before the last, talks to what Member Masango was referring to as to Rule 286, subsection 4 of the NA, which reads as follows. After due deliberations, the committee must consider a motion of disability on the subject matter of the bill, and if rejected, it must immediately table the bill and its report on the bill. If the motion of disability is adopted, the committee must proceed to deliberate on the details of the legislation. In order to comply with the North Gauteng High Court order for a development of a comprehensive legal solution to the challenges in the foster care system, the committee, if agrees now, is of the opinion that the bill is desirable, and then will proceed to deliberate on the details of the legislation. That's the bill, Chair. That's the report in a nutshell that the committee must adopt so that it can start with the clause by clause on Friday. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Lindy. I think it's clear enough even today, as it was already clear enough last meeting. So can I get a hand to adopt the MOD? Where are the honourable members? Alex?
Yes, Chair. I move for the adoption of the MOD, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Alex. Any second? Can I second by myself? Since I don't see any hand.
We are, Chairperson, I'm seconding.
Okay, thank you, Honourable. Honourable Mangani is seconding. So it means we are going to proceed with these debates and discussions, and we will deal with clause by clause on Friday. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. What is the next meeting?
Chair, the next item is the adoption of minutes of the 23rd and the 25th of August, of May, of March. August already. Sorry for that mistake, Chair.
Lindy, can you fly? Do you still have time at least to adopt those minutes rather than to defer them? Hello?
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members. The meeting of the 23rd of March was when we received a matrix from the department containing all responses from the stakeholders on issues raised on the Children's Amendment Bill. The members present was you, Chairperson, Member Stock, Member Pilangulu, Member Hlongo, Member Manganyi and Mutaung from the African National Congress. And then from a Democratic Alliance, we had Umama Umasango, Member Abrams, and Member Opperman. And then from the Economic Freedom Front, Freedom Fighters, we have Member Eris and Member Mare. And then from the Inkatha Freedom Party, we have Member Vanda Merve, and then we had an apology from Member Sukers due to prior commitments. Chair, the member, there were apologies from Minister who was unable to attend the cabinet at the meeting due to cabinet engagement, as well as the deputy minister who was in hospital. We adopted the agenda, the move as Member Manganyi and seconded by Member Abrahams. And then due to time constraints, we defer the adoption of minutes in that particular meeting. And then ADG Khunu gave an overview, a high-level overview on the submission, and proceeded to give Advocate in Churches to take the committee through the presentation. There were a number of issues raised about the corporal punishment, as well as the issue of the Big B Savers was discussed in great length, and then the issue, the waiting of care, etc. But there were resolutions made by the committee this particular day that there must be an expert, which was here today, must be invited to take the committee through the baby saver concept, as well as that we need to also schedule a follow-up meeting, because the matrix, it was such a comprehensive document and the committee couldn't finalize the document. They ended on page 344. So there were such three resolutions taken by the committee to defer the minutes, to have a follow-up meeting to finalize the matrix, as well to invite an expert to take the committee on the baby saver concept. Those were the minutes in a nutshell, Chair.
Okay, Lindy. Let me check the hands again. I don't see any hands.
Chairperson.
Okay.
Chairperson, my name. Stock? Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. I move for the adoption of the minutes as a true reflection of the meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Stock. Honorable Masango, yes, second. Yes.
Honorable Bilangula, I second the move by Honorable.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable. I know that we're pressed of time, even outside. Thank you very much. Lindy, the last minutes. It's things that we were discussing, really. So it's a matter of adding them, deleting a few things. Agree.
Chair, the last set was for last Friday, the 25th of March. The full complement from the ANC was present, consists of 6 members. And then from the Democratic Alliance, there were 3 members, as well as Member Vanda Merwe and Member Sukers was unable to attend that week. And then, Chair, we received no apologies from member Sukers
We received the agenda was moved by Member Manganye and seconded by Member Pinangulu. We considered two sets of minutes, the 9 and the 16th, and then we moved to the finalization of the matrix from page 144 to 523. And then, Chair, the issue of the MOD was presented to the committee, and the committee had a lengthy discussion and was of the view that it needs to be deferred to this meeting, which is the 30th of March. Thereafter, we've made a number of resolutions that we need today to adopt the MOD, and also we must ensure that the parliamentary legal advisor attends the meeting of the formal stage in order to provide a legal guidance to the committee, and also the expert on the concept of baby saver, and then that's it, Chair.
Thank you.
And then we also had a problem, Chair, which I have noted. There was a really serious discussion from members to each department for failing to comply with submissions of questions for written responses, of which the department responded on Sunday with responses, and then disseminated the responses to you. And I hope they will improve going forward. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, thanks, Lydia. To say that we saw the responses, I wish really it should be like that at all times. First, before we get the responses. Can we get the adoption of the minutes? Move over the adoption of the minutes.
I will move for the adoption of Chairperson, Honorable Fonamarda.
Thank you, Honorable Lizelle. Honorable Bridget, are you seconding?
I'd like to second, yes, Chair.
Thank you very much. The meeting has adjourned. You were so cute in things.
I'm already in the bath.
You just put cherry on top of whatever that I used. Thank you very much. The meeting has adjourned. You can quickly rush to the bus. I'm already outside.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. See you on, we'll talk on Friday, virtual meeting. Thank you.